Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to WFHR's Director's Playhouse for this session 66. Your host and program director here, James J. Mailoff, with my partner in art and the head of sound around here, Seth Habager. Let's roll.
Once more.
I can do it that way. I'm Italian. You can't. Now, it's a little offensive. You doing it is a little...
was Italian.
Verona.
Works out.
All right, let's try that again.
Take two.
I was going to be clever and do the Shakespeare line as we get ready to, and I totally mucked it up. Anyway, but that's why we're here today. We're here to talk Shakespeare.
We welcome to the WFHR stage our friends from CWAC, Central Wisconsin Area Community Theater. We have Joe Nowinski with us, along with Susan Edgren, here to talk about their upcoming production of Romeo and Juliet and the Schmeckle Shakes. You guys, thanks for being here. How you doing?
Great. We're trying to recover from the humidity in rehearsals last night.
We'll be excited when the temperatures come down a little bit. You know, that's one of the hardest things I think about doing theater outdoors is that navigating weather, especially in a place like Schmeckle, and that it's a little bit more exposed of a stage area. So like last night we took down, because I saw the rain was coming, because I'm a consummate forecast checker, and we have to be. We took everything down, and I'm like, you know what? Let's lower the tents. It's going to rain tonight. It's going to be windy. I haven't heard back from Pat yet whether or not everything's okay, but that's like just a little bit of the nature of the piece, because after doing it, this is our fifth Schmeckle Shakes production.
Nice.
And I think we've learned a lot over the last 5 years, Susan.
Yes,
but otherwise, the show's been doing good. The wonderful thing about this is that the next few days, there's no rain. It's going to get cooler, too, so we'll have very temperate weather for the shows themselves. So usually weather is a big driver of ticket sales. So, you got to get your tickets, clearly, because the weather is going to be great.
Yeah, it looks good.
This is going to be the easiest interview I've ever done. I don't have to say or do anything. Joe has got all of this. I'm just going to shut up and just go. I'm going to go get lunch, actually. I'm really hungry.
Yeah, I'll go. I got this. We're fine.
I want to start off with the banquet. I think this is a fun part of this that really kicks things off. And then we'll get into the show itself and everything. And you guys have already touched on this a little bit. Now, the production date is July 31st. This is opening night for you guys.
Yeah, that's Thursday.
6 o'clock the very next night, you'll be having the opening banquet that's going to be going on. What can people expect with the banquet?
Yeah. Don't look at me. I just know I can eat for free. Then.
That's true. I do let the actor.
Like a true actor. Like a true actor. Yes.
Well,
Joe, what can you tell us?
Well, so as many of you guys have known, so Susan's directed 3 of our 5 productions. Mm-hmm. This is my first time directing a Schmeckle Shakes production, but little does everybody know, the last 5 years, I'm actually the executive producer. So as the producer, I get to put together all these little fun things that we get to do and add on. And one of the things that CWACT had done in the past is we used to do a dinner theater every summer. I remember a bunch of shows Larry Hansen used to direct. I mean, the last one I saw was Nonsense. And we used to do it at the Elks Club in Stevens Point. And we're trying to bring that flavor sort of the area, because we didn't really have anything like it where we can have sort of that dinner theater concept. So during Twelfth Night, that was the first year we did the sort of season opening dinner. And we called it like the Cowboy Chuck Wagon or something like that.
Because it was a Western Twelfth
Night. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
And then last year when we did Merry Wives of Windsor, it was a little bit more flavored towards like a luau because of the nature of kind of like the 1960s. Mm-hmm. So this year we're really kind of focusing back on like, well, we're in Appalachia, we're doing a classic banquet, and just kind of starting the season at CWACT strong by making it like a season opening banquet. So there's going to be barbecue, there'll be, you know, countrysides, we have a cash bar. It starts at 5. We're actually still selling tickets. That's right, we have more tickets to sell for dinner. So that we really want to just have people come and early. It starts at 5 o'clock. People can actually set up their chairs right away, and they eat underneath the Menzel Family Pavilion at Schmeckle Shakes.
Ooh,
so they
nice.
Check on in. Everything's set there outside. And it's really a great experience just to have folks from around the community. Usually the mayor, Mike Wiesel, will come. I don't know if you guys know the Oz from 90FM. He usually comes too. So we have a lot of local celebrities that come. But it's really for anybody who's looking for just that full experience. So, yeah, I know we have 60 total tickets. I think I've sold about 30. So let's just keep folks who want to come should come. And we can upgrade tickets to if they have regular tickets for the $20, the dinner tickets are $40 each. So that includes the dinner and then access to the cash bar.
I love the themes and focusing with the show, playing into the show with that, with the food and everything. The idea in itself is great. We, as you've touched on a little bit, Joe, we kind of gotten away from theater, dinner in a theater, dinner in a show, some of that and everything. And I think that when you talk to people and what they're looking for out of entertainment, what is going to bring them to the theater? They want experiences. It's not just a great show. It's not just great acting. All the things that we've known in theater our whole lives, they're good and they still want that, but I want a little more now. I want a memory to be made here. And oftentimes this is a way to do it, is at the dinner and a show. Something like that. It really does help bring people in. It does help bring maybe even your average brand or somebody who is on the fence about it, bring them in. There's also something kind of doing Romeo and Juliet and having a dinner beforehand. I don't know why, but I feel like that ties in together so well.
there's the party, you know.
There's a party scene.
There's some connections there, I feel like, that I just need more.
If you didn't follow my advice, we could have had, you know, a wedding in mourning.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh God!
Yeah, like a post-show luncheon, you know.
With
so fantastic. Morbid, Susan, so morbid.
the luncheon's important. It's a bonding experience. But now we're gonna go with the banquet before. That seems more positive. I'm a positive guy.
It's a great idea, and something that Seth and I and Melissa we talk a lot about on our morning shows. We don't have nearly as many opportunities for strangers sitting next to strangers and laughing. You know, we don't whether it's the movie theaters or theater, we're not doing it as much as we used to. Any chances for that? And opportunities for that, we want to embrace and, you know, have more of them. And it's great to hear that some tickets have sold. We want them sold out. We want to get a full crowd out there for you guys and a full dinner hall for you guys with this. So that is fantastic. It's a great idea. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah. So we're at about, I think right now, over 200 tickets sold for the whole weekend. And I've just been pushing the idea that it's good weather. And I'm always surprised for this event to how, and for most of our theater events, how many people will buy their tickets either the day of online or they'll have walk-ups. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
there's lots of them.
So that's something too. So I will say that there are a limited number of seats in the space. So if people are going to come to the show, my biggest suggestion is make sure to get your ticket early and then make sure to check in early, because the way that the seating works at Schmeichle is a little different. Basically in the space, there's, you know, rock seating where people can kind of sit on the rocks in a certain level, but people are also allowed to bring like cushions. We've had people bring even their camp chairs and stuff like that. Just because trying to create the experience and having people with their things kind of come in and make the theater spot their own, right?
And there are blankets on the hillsides on both sides.
Oh, yeah. That's like my favorite.
And sometimes we've even seen, like, especially on the Sunday matinee, we've seen standing room only.
Wow. Where,
so people are standing behind the rocks at the top of the hill.
Oh, it's awesome. I'm not jealous at all. when it comes to one of my questions that I like to ask when it comes to picking a play and stuff and choosing the play, I like to get into that. It has never felt more silly to ask that question when it comes to Romeo and Juliet and why you would choose to do Romeo and Juliet. But I am a little curious because as we're talking about bringing people to theaters, and there's no theater in the world, no matter what we're talking about, that as well, we're good. We don't need to worry about getting people here or anything. Every theater company, at least if you're not worrying about it, you should be. It's important. To bring people in and keep new people in as well as our recurring people. A show like Romeo and Juliet, there may be no other play that I can throw out there. And everybody, if you've never seen a show in your life, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And you even, to the point, know a bit of the concept, a bit of the play and the process and stuff. So, Joe, to choose a play like that, I think is brave. I think it's a great choice, and it's a great one. Yes, it's known and everything, but you're also walking in with people are going to have, well, I've seen this. I've seen every version of Romeo and Juliet. I know this show. It's you or the actors to challenge yourself with this. I did Romeo and Juliet twice. It's the only show that I've done twice, and it's the only character I've played twice, Mercutio. And both times, I got that feeling going into it. Hey, what do you got? I've seen this. What do you got? And I love that. I love that challenge because, for one, you guys will bring it. You guys are going to give them something. I have every confidence in the world in that. I'll say that I think that what I tell any kid that I've ever had is that wants to reinvent the joke, like, just tell the joke. You telling it yourself is going to make it original. Nobody like you in the world. So you're going to put your own spin on this like nobody else. Nobody's told how the chicken crossed the road like you have. There's nobody like you. So you guys doing these parts, you directing it, Joe, there's nobody like you guys. You're going to give a different spin to this. You're going to give something that audiences haven't seen. But it's still, you got to make that decision. What was it like, and what did you have other choices? You don't have to tell me the plays, but was it just, oh, I'm doing this, or did you chewed on it for a while?
Well, you know, it's been kind of a story. It's a story. And long story short, we've done four comedies in a row, Rich Meekly Shakes, and I have been complaining since the third comedy that we need a tragedy or a history, which history is hard to do for Shakespeare because most people lose the historical context. Lots of great stuff there, but just the nature of it was, you know, number one, switching up to a tragedy. Two was, you know, of course, who's willing to direct or able to direct. And we've had a couple directors be interested in doing other tragedies. Like, I've heard whisperings of people wanting to do Macbeth.
That's me.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I know exactly.
You'll have to talk to Jeff Cook about that,
Susan,
too.
Not whispering about it. No.
But like King Lear. There's all these really fantastic shows. Mm-hmm. But I have been chewing on Romeo and Juliet for a while personally. You're absolutely right, James. One of the things that, as we were picking the play, and once again, as the producer, I have the sort of process from the beginning to the end. Susan lets me do all the administrative work because, of course. The reality became, it's 2025, and we live in really interesting times. And I think the reality behind Romeo and Juliet, not only was it a conscious choice because we want to do a tragedy, it was a conscious choice because it's popular, because I think, once again, going back to it, it's a popular show, it's got name recognition. And then, you know, 2024 happened, and it's 2025 right now. And I don't want to make this into a political thing, but I want to say that
except the, we are all, you know, the Capulets are in blue, Montagues are in red.
I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it's hard not to. Yeah.
You can't really avoid it.
Yeah.
It's gentle.
Well, yeah. And the reality behind Shakespeare, and I wrote this in my director's notes, and I asked this for every play I'm ever in, which is, who is the protagonist? Who is the person in the play who does the most change, who at the end kind of has that, you know, epiphany moment. We follow their catharsis. And the reality of the matter with Romeo and Juliet is that there really isn't a character that changes except, and this is going to seem crazy, this is my interpretation, mind you, the only characters that change are Lord Capulet and Lord Montague. This is a play about society. It is a play about how the actions in the society are pushing us to find peace with one another, but the inevitable construct of the society is focused on hate, it's focused on derision, and the reality of the process is that, and I tell this a lot, and it reminds me a lot of thinking about Hadestown, for those of us who have seen Hadestown, right? Which is Eurydice and Orpheus, right? And Hermes, the beginning of that, says specifically, maybe this time it'll be different. Maybe this time the song will be different, even though we know it's not. But that's actually the purpose of Romeo and Juliet. Because at every turn, one thing could have changed the outcome of the whole play. But it doesn't. Right, because the action still happens as is. Right, if Romeo's found out at the dance, over, right? If Friar Lawrence was capable of going through and getting them married and revealing it to the whole city, like, these people love each other and we should, totally changes the play. But it doesn't happen. Because in the end, you know, we're trying to prevent sacrifice and essentially the fall of this town, right? We're trying to avoid tragedy in real life.
Yeah.
Because if we hate our neighbor, if we hate our brother, then guess what we're going to find? We're going to find tragedy. But it's through the tragedy of Romeo and Juliet that the town comes together. The families come together. And my question to you is, James, do you think we as a society today in the United States can avoid that tragedy to find peace?
Yeah,
that's a good question.
That's the question that this show is trying to ask.
Well, I will say with my last naive bone I have in my body, I believe we can. I believe we will. I think that it's always darkest before the storm. And I, as a kid who has studied a lot of history and a lot of rises and falls of empires and things, that's where we're at right now. We're a young country. We're a teenager of a country compared to the rest of the world. We're going through some growing pains, and I think things are rough, bad. I'm not understating anything right now any more than I would anything of 20, 50 years ago and the problems we had then. But I'm a silly American, and I believe in this country, and I really do believe that when it comes right down to it, the land, the people, we make things happen. We always have. It's not some billionaire. It's not somebody who is power hungry or wants to be a dictator that chooses our today or tomorrow. It's we do that, and we do that together. And a play like this, like a lot of Shakespeare's work, has modern ties to it or modern relevancy to it and everything. And 2025 and the things that you're talking about, Joe, they're not new to anybody, and something that we all have to face day to day. The thing that I think that is upon all of us as Americans, every single one of us, if you're going to be in this game, do what you're doing right there and put some good in. Anybody can bark. Anybody can complain. That's fine. That's part of being an American. But what do you got to, what are your solutions? What are you doing to help? Because we got plenty of people complaining. We got plenty of people barking and everything. But what you're talking about there with that and giving people, what can I do with my skill set? I'm not a doctor. I can't go heal people. I'm not a politician. I can't lie. I had to do it.
It is a universal truth.
We got this skill set of being able to entertain. So how can we help people while entertaining with this skill set? And something like this, a show like this, touching on the things you are there, I believe in what you're saying. I think it's true. Certainly for a show like this, but really any theater. Yeah. Again, going back to strangers sitting in a building together laughing at the same thing and saying, oh, you think that's funny too? How is that possible? We didn't vote for the same person. How can we laugh at the same jokes? Well, we've been doing this since the beginning, man. Like, this is about what we've done as Americans forever. Let's get back to that, reminding each other of that, and not being so divided by these basically people that divide us because they have all the ulterior motives.
Right.
Is that what I'm looking for there?
And you got it. The other thing that I think is really remarkable, and you totally touched on it, is how relevant Shakespeare still is. Yeah. It is amazing how we can still find on just about every Shakespeare play, you can find things that still resonate extremely well in this day and age. In 2025, who would have thought, did Shakespeare think that when he wrote it? Probably not. He's probably, I got to get it done. I got to get it done. We're on stage.
I've got a deadline. But human nature doesn't change, basically. Yeah. He knew lying politicians, although they didn't call them politicians in those days as much, but he knew, he wrote, first thing, you kill all the lawyers. But he wrote, actually, so much of what he was writing, he was using, stories and, that he had read or heard elsewhere, but he was also using current events. I've been reading, that's what I've been doing the last few years, is reading a lot of books, nonfiction books, about what was going on in Elizabethan England, during the time he was writing. Now I'm in the middle of Dan Shapiro's book on what was going on in Jacobean England. He was writing the Jacobean plays, of which Macbeth is one.
It's kind of sad.
just shameless it about is. It. I love it. Don't you ever change.
Joe has had a passion for Romeo and Juliet. I mean, he's been telling me for 3 years. you know, he's had this concept and what he wanted to do with it, and he had to just wait till the time was right with his, you know, personal life and everything mm-hmm. to be able to do it. And I've had a passion for, you know, the comedies that I've directed, but I also have a passion for Macbeth.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because there's also very much, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's mm-hmm. that theme in there, but there's mm-hmm. also other themes, you know, that I really am just dying to delve with that I've been working, you know, with the play. Yeah. Myself for a few years.
Let's get into that part of it, because that is another really awesome and creative part of this, and something we've seen in times before where Romeo and Juliet or other Shakespeare plays are modernized or they put a different spin on it or something like that. I've never heard of the idea of what you're doing with this version of Romeo and Juliet, and I purposely not touched on it yet. I wanted to just go ahead and talk about the show, the presentation, some of that, and let you guys speak to how you've reimagined this classic, wonderful show.
Okay. Spoiler alert on this one. because Susan's been like, Joe's been talking about this forever. And the board approved my directing back in November. In December, I got a flyer in the mail for a production of Romeo and Juliet by the Milwaukee Repertory Theater set in Appalachia, is literally the setting I had. I've been working on for so long. And of course, great minds think alike.
Right.
Because kind of going back to what we were talking about before, right? The goal of this production was to make this story American, uniquely American, but also touch on the history side. So I used to teach history for about a decade. I work at Mid-State Technical College right now. So education's been in my background, but one of the most interesting time periods that kind of keeps getting brought up colloquially is the Hatfield-McCoy conflict,
sure.
Right? Because it's something that's uniquely American. It represents this Appalachian theme and what happens in sort of like these back areas and kind of the nature of the process of how these conflicts happen. Ironically, historically, there is a Romeo and Juliet-esque story nestled in the Hatfield-McCoy feud of Kentucky and West Virginia. And that's what, once again, all this was just fuel to the fire. Now, of course, that story ends up differently than the play itself, thank goodness. But it goes back to trying to bring this current, trying to tell an American story, and then having that American story resonate with the actors and the music and the sound and the space, because you know Schmeichle is a naturalistic location, right? Very pastoral, and you know Romeo and Juliet's a very urban play, mm-hmm. right? So to turn it, I wanted to you know not just kind of keep it for the space itself and interpret it for the space. Right. But also bring in other components that can really heighten the Appalachian bluegrass country feel. So, for instance, one of my, and I was working on this basically from the moment I heard I was directing, was who is going to do the music?
Yeah.
Because that was such an important component of bringing it into the piece, so it brings authenticity to what's going on. And I honestly feel like I hit a home run because...
Yes, you did.
Some friends had told me about a few folks. One of them was Art Stevenson. Art Stevenson, he's going to yell at me. Is it High Art Stevenson and Deep Water? Do you remember the band?
That's High Water.
High Water. Thank you. Art Stevenson, High Water. Now he won't yell at me. but I had gone out. They play a little. They play in a little place just east of Rosholt called Bart's Pizza. And I had gone there one time, and he plays there from like 7 to 9. And then he'll do like an open mic. And I went there one day. I took my wife and kids, which was a little awkward because we were in a bar. But we had a good time with great music. And I talked to Art, and I'm like, hey, Art, I got this great idea. And Art had always wanted to do theater, right? Mm-hmm. And but he actually used to work at UWSP in the scene shop building stuff.
Oh,
yeah. But when he went, just because he was a UWSP grad, just like myself. And so I was like, oh, awesome, you know? But he's like, I've never had a chance to be on stage before. And I'm like, I would love to, you know, bring you in on this capacity. I think it's such a fantastic piece. And once again, once I kind of explained to him, like I did with y'all, about sort of the setting, the purpose, and then, he was sold, you know. And I think that that's one of the things that, you know, actually I think I'm going to talk to the cast a little bit more tonight about, you know, just the nature of how this show is not about like one single individual. It's about the society. And what art does is the music just wraps around every bit of the show. And I actually am just really thankful for art. I might get a little cry here because it goes back. It's just that. So
it has been a dream. It's a marriage that's just really made in the Smoky Mountains.
Well, and then I wrote a couple pieces for the play myself because I'm a musician. I'm a lyricist. So the two main headlining songs I had given to Art, and I'm like, I want to try to incorporate these into the show, you know. And he said, well, I'll take a look at them. And what he was, him and Ann Pollock and Kyle Miller were able to do with the pieces, I mean, yeah, it was like literally meeting a dream, like something I couldn't have seen 7 months ago.
Right.
If we were to have the same conversation, to have that kind of, you know, really what is just a gift to watch it happen in front of me.
And amazing.
New musicians to me. I've never run into them, never met them before. So you have Art, who sings and plays guitar and harmonica. And then you have Anna, who sings. And then you have Kyle, who's either on banjo or fiddle.
Yeah.
And it's, they're so good.
They're so talented.
They've been so much fun. They're such lovely people to work with. They're having a ball.
Yeah.
That's great.
I get to yell at them.
Well, it's hilarious. And this is like one of my favorite things about this show, too, because Susan does such a great job of interacting with not just all the actors, but all the other pieces, right? And it's one of those great things where you can bring fantastic folks to the stage and just watch them all play around. That's honestly my favorite things. And I got really inspired, Susan, last year from Merry Wives, because Merry Wives had this great sort of very colloquial talk back and forth, and the characters would always have these little things, and I think it brings us into the world so much better, because it also, you know, unlike Merry Wives, I think this show also does this breaking the fourth wall a lot, right? It really, lots of people are talking to the audience, and that's something that, you know, it's harder to do for some productions, and I'm really happy to bring it to this production, because if you go back to the Globe, you go back to, gosh, 1599, you know.
Or even 2025.
Yeah, they're talking to the audience, you know.
Yeah, right,
I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And that's good, because then it brings them in, right? And it makes Shakespeare less foreign to people. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's the hard thing. And my dad's in the show, who... I love him to death, but the other day he's like, well, I don't like that Shakespeare stuff. And I'm like, well, thank you for being in the show, number one.
he didn't like your set decor on the hillside.
Well, that's a different story altogether. That wasn't my set decor. We got it moved. One thing he was able to, once again, is trying to bring meaning to the words, right? Mm-hmm. And it takes fantastic actors to help us understand what it means. Mm-hmm. And that's actually just one thing I'm super thankful for, the cast. Everybody brings the meaning, and it makes sense.
Senior's doing a great job. And I really, it took him a while to get started, but he and I have, scenes together. We have stuff, and he's really come a long way.
Yeah.
He really has. Yeah. And he's actually, when the spot where he, throws me around and yells at me, he scares me.
Oh, he's a scare. Oh, yeah, that's just a little bit of my childhood. Don't tell him I said that.
Oh, like all theater. This is also therapy.
True theater.
Yes.
A lot of people don't realize that. In Latin,
no, they don't.
Theater means therapy. Yes. And it does.
That's why the first three letters are the same.
Yep,
that's right.
First four letters.
This wonderful production is going to be surrounded by incredible music. Be sure to take that in along with all this in the setting and the great atmosphere that you're going to have with this. You'll have that music to bring you the soundtrack of this. Art Stevenson, an artist and a music that you can prep for with some of our shows on the weekends on our sister stations.
Yeah, that's right.
Trail
Shameless
tunes.
Plug.
Oh, yeah.
Trail tunes. The best of cowboy, western, and south of the border songs. Then right after, of course, is Red Folk and Blue, Laura's amazing Americana show that lots of bluegrass and folk and other country-ish songs. If it has any small tangential connection to country she plays it. So
yeah.
It's really amazing. So check 6 and 7 on Saturday nights.
Check those out, everybody. And thank you so much for listening. Susan, and I don't want to keep you guys too much longer here or anything, but I have really do appreciate the time. And thank you so much. This has been a blast. Susan, with your character, you're playing the nurse.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that and what how that's been for you, playing this character, because you've played so many Shakespearean characters before and stuff. You haven't done this one, have you?
And directed a lot of them, too.
Yes. Yeah.
Actually, I have done this one before, but not the whole play. And I've played a lot of characters, yes, but they were out at during my Renfest years.
Okay.
I had a partner,
Penny,
and we did scenes.
Gotcha.
From all kinds of different plays, and then we added two guys, and we did more scenes. But when it comes to actually being in a full-scale, long, actual production, it's only been The Tempest, when I was about 24, and now.
Wow.
And that's the big reason why I auditioned, because I wanted to play her for the entire play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm the right age now. When you're 22 and you're playing the nurse, and your best friend is 22 and she's playing Juliet, it's a little different.
I should tell you about my auditioning for Atticus Finch at 25.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just dumbfounded that I wasn't cast. No. Like, what? I'm so good.
It's
good.
Yeah, if you go through college, especially as a theater major, you all do it. You play roles that, you're not really ready for.
I joke about that, but with a role like that, that is something that, if I'm lucky enough to get older, I can look forward to. Maybe I can audition for that again and maybe do it one day. Did you ever look at this character like that?
I can honestly say no, actually.
Yeah.
I've been so focused on doing other things, and mostly my directing, that I really kind of stopped thinking about all the various roles I could actually still act in, except for Arsenic and Old Lace, and I missed that opportunity because we were in Texas. So, but this has been, she's a ball.
Yeah.
I'm the right age to play her now. Mm-hmm. She has, she's actually been a wet nurse. I've kind of created a backstory. She's not just for Juliet, but I think she's been a wet nurse in town for quite a number. I think that's why the actor who plays Tybalt and I, because we're supposed to be so close, and we figured she probably nursed him.
Interesting.
And
okay.
Just kept up until Juliet came along, because he's a lot older than she is, and so then she kept up. He's still in the family, so she still kind of looked after this little kid, and she's Juliet has been her primary focus since she was born, and so she. As so many, she's kind of a surrogate mother in a way.
Yeah.
She's still a servant.
Yeah.
She's still a hired help.
Mm-hmm.
But she's the one that's there for Juliet all the time. She's the one that hears Juliet's, all of her gripes, all of her joys, all of her, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
Juliet teases her like she doesn't tease her mother.
Yeah.
There's a different, a closer relationship there.
I had not thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, we have a lot of fun. Rachel, let me have Rachel's last name. I'm terrible with names.
No, I mispronounced it at the mid-state graduation. It should be, I think it's Kujewski.
Okay.
Kujewski.
There you go.
Rachel Kujewski.
Rachel and I are having had a wonderful time, and we do have a good rapport together, and we have funny scenes together, and we have very sad scenes together.
Yeah, it really runs the gamut, and it's actually just been a joy being able to direct Susan, because Susan's been my director too, but I've also been Susan's director before. We did Adam's
Family.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. And what's really great is, and this is what's fantastic for me, just to kind of interject my director-isms here, but both Susan and Rachel play so well together, and my favorite is just, the interactions between them, because it feels so real, it feels honest, and it spans the whole gamut from making someone laugh to making someone cry, and that's what we do in theater. That's the goal,
You've touched on this a little bit, Joe. I just wanted to get to this a little and then get into the details when people can take in the show, and we'll wrap up here. But you, the outdoors part of this, were you guys rehearsing outdoors as well? Because, in case it hasn't been clear to everybody yet, the show is taking place outdoors.
Yes.
But did you guys rehearse that way, or did you have any experiences with that before getting out there into the wild?
We have always dreamed about going out during the regular rehearsal process.
He has.
That's fair.
To be clear.
To be fair.
I'd be the same as you, Ben.
The nice thing is that we do have access to using it for the regular rehearsal period. This is just really nice, and I know WRCT folks and lots of folks in the area can really really appreciate having the space to work in. Mm-hmm. It's a controlled environment.
Yep.
We're allowed to bring the set out there. All the props are in that single location.
Yep.
But going out to Schmeichle and rehearsing, while awesome and fun and exciting, before that first week, we wouldn't have any of those pieces out there. That's kind of the hardest thing is when you're working in
all the props and sets would be left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, he tried. He did try to schedule it a couple of times.
And then it rained. Yeah.
Of course.
You know that it just was not in the cards.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's okay.
So we don't really get load in, it's the weekend before, and then that week is pretty much like we have at Century for Inside. It's really the same kind of schedule.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then what was great is, today's Tuesday. Yesterday was Monday. We had our first dress rehearsal yesterday. So this is the first time we were using all the costumes. We were using microphones. We were out in the space.
The set pieces.
Yeah. And so even with all of those new additions, from the perspective of the director, it was so beautiful. Cool. And that's kind of the best thing is, like, if we had to put tomorrow's show up and show that in front of the audience, we had a fully together show. All the pieces fit.
Are there?
Oh, nice. Yeah. Oh, you
I was telling the guys back in the tent, all the guys that are involved in the fighting.
Yeah.
The fighting's really good.
Oh, that's yeah.
Oh, nice.
Choreographed all of the stage fighting. And we've been watching it, and it just keeps getting better and better, more realistic. They're getting really into it. But I'm sitting now back in a tent off stage, and all I can do is hear it. And I told the guys, my gosh, it sounds fantastic just because their voices, just the lines and the grunting and the fighting and the, it sounds really kind of real.
Nice.
It looks real. God. Yeah. The first time I saw it in the rehearsal space fully at full speed, I was afraid. And Christopher and I had worked on those fights for 2 months before we started it. And him and I had a good understanding of how they were going to go. And then when he showed the actors how to do it, and I watched the actors do it, I'm like, someone's going to get hurt. But we have a very important rule at rehearsal, right? No hospital. So that's in stage combat. We are always safety first. So just know that no actors are purposely getting hurt during the production. And we go through lots of safety training and we do our fight calls beforehand. So, but that's like Susan said.
The weapons aren't plastic.
No, they are officially stage combat.
I haven't directed in a while, so I'm taking that note. No hospitals.
Yeah. No hospitals.
Great note. It's a great note, Joe. Thank you for that.
We kind of broke that in Sherlock Holmes.
Yes. We got so close. And then right towards the week of. It was the week of.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
2 weeks.
Yeah, it's all it. So real quick, before we let you go and get into the details of when people can take in the show and get tickets and everything, Susan has been through this before, but I wasn't sure if I was going to do this or not. I'm going to pull this out. I'm going to do this.
You do it with Joe? Right? Okay.
Because Joe hasn't been through this before yet, so I have a question that I like to ask everybody. Before they leave us and the first time they join us and all that, Joe. And it's really just an honor of kind of inside the actor's studio and some of that and everything. And the great James Lipton always wrapping things up with a wonderful question. So for my question, if you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why?
Oh, and as a history person, you think I'd have a really good answer for that.
I was so excited when you said you were a history teacher. Oh, yeah.
Well, coffee in the Western world didn't really exist before, 1700. So I'm going to go post-1700. And, I'm probably having coffee with a guy like Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why, Teddy. And I go back, right, as a history person, Teddy Roosevelt represents this really unique individual in history. And he was not a perfect person or a perfect president by any stretch. So that would be a great, I like those conversations be wonderful. But he was also probably one of the most intelligent people to be president in the history of the country. And the amount of book reading he did, the kind of nature in which he handled how to deal with reform and how he thought about positive change for Americans. You know, it's something that you just, you know, today I think would be great to wrap our head around, you know, and probably I'm just going to my honorable mentions, probably a guy like Nelson Mandela, just because understanding how to, you know, fight against depression when the whole society is against you and yet in the end still find success, you know, like how do you deal with how do you navigate being in prison for so long and still keep your moral and ethical compass, you know? And then the third would probably be the Dalai Lama. All of them. All of the Dalai Lamas I want to talk to.
That's either the beginning of a great joke or just a really nice afternoon.
Three Dalai Lamas walk into a bar. One ducks.
That's a fantastic answer, man. That was fantastic. That was really good. And appreciate that. And appreciate you guys being here today. Thanks so much for hanging out with us, taking time with us. Please say hello to the cast. We want to shout out the whole cast, all the crew, everybody working behind the scenes to make this happen. The production, everybody. It doesn't happen without every single one of you, and we greatly appreciate you all. Wish you could have been here with us. Appreciate you guys being here, though, and talking about this. Make sure to get your tickets. Go to CWAC.org right now. Get those tickets. All right, did you do it? No, go. Get those tickets right now, and be sure to be ready for July 31st when the show's premiere at 6 o'clock. Then Friday, August 1st, they'll be back at it at 6. That, of course, will feature the season opening banquet and performance, all of that. That'll begin at banquet will begin at 5.
Yes.
The show will begin at 6, so keep that in mind. Saturday, August 2nd, 6 o'clock show, and then everything will wrap up on Sunday, August 3rd with a 2 o'clock matinee. This all takes place at, of course, Schmeekly Reserve. I say it right this time. I always mess it up. Head on over there and check that beautiful area. Shout out to them, by the way, too. Love that area. Love everything they do over there. And you get your tickets at CWAC.org. Everybody, CWAC.org. Buy local, support local, support the arts. As I remind you always, Wisconsin finished dead last in the union at funding the arts. Let's change that. Let's work that around. And let's support our locals. And enjoy. And you guys, have a great run. Enjoy yourselves.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks for the time.